Ohio seniors, it's time to make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Plans start at $0 per month and include $0 doctor visits and $0 generic prescription drugs. Visit medmutual.com/review or call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. MedMutual Advantage plans are HMO, HMO, POS, and PPO plans offered by Medical Mutual of Ohio with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in a MedMutual Advantage plan depends on contract renewal.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You already drank yourself across the narrow sea.
In a box. Why stop now?
Because we are talking about the future of our country.
The future is shit. Just like the past.
Welcome to our podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Karen.
And I'm Grace.
And this is Game of Microphones, episode 5. One thing I'm noticing already as I'm preparing for Game of Microphones is I wish they had some kind of Game of Thrones spelling dictionary I could install on my Mac because it keeps correcting all the names.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and the names are hard to spell, too. You need to add them all to like your dictionary.
Uh-huh. My fingers aren't quite used to typing them out yet.
Daenerys.
D-A-E. There's a Y in there.
I just put Danny in my notes.
Yeah, exactly. I need to start doing that too. Anyways, I'm excited. This is our first real, you know, seasonal. This podcast episode is going to be more like what this podcast is about than what you've heard so far if you've listened, right?
And the best one. Yeah. Yes. And it, you know, it's Gracie and Jason and me, so it's got that.
You have the bonus.
Best of the bunch. Is that what you're saying?
Best foot forward.
Pick of the litter. Just kidding, Eric and
no
David.
Offense,
love you, sweetheart.
Even though it's true. No, I'm just kidding. All right. Shall we get right into it?
Let's do it.
Sure.
All right. It's our top 5 highlights of Game of Thrones season 5, episode 1, The Wars to Come. So what'd you guys think in general?
Overall, I absolutely loved it. I gave it 4 out of 5 pissed off dragons.
I thought it was good. I thought it was a great, solid episode. I mean, it was a little bit slow, but I think that's kind of how Game of Thrones tends to be. And I'm just so glad to be back there. And, you know, I never rate things, so I didn't come prepared, but I think I would give it maybe a 4.25, mm-hmm. You know.
When you say it tends to be slow, you mean like the first episode of the season?
Yeah, I think when you're getting all the setup and we're touching base with everybody again and trying to figure out where we are.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it's interesting. I also thought it was relatively calm, and yet we have like the death of Mance Rayder, who's a major character, but still it felt kind of like if there could be a slow day in Westeros episode, this would be it. But I loved it. I mean, it felt like a chance to reflect and kind of a prologue for the rest of the season. And I just love being back in the world and seeing where everything is and how things are being set up and all that.
Yep.
Exactly.
I'm going to hold off on ratings because I don't know how to rate this show yet. I got to reset my scale or something.
Yeah.
But I really liked
it. Yeah, it's hard. And I don't like rating in general, actually. But
you don't have to. Okay, let's get in our top 5. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay.
All right. So my number 5 was the wonderful buddy road trip movie that is Tyrion and Varys. I love the opening with Tyrion arriving in
Pentos.
By Crate. And Varys telling Tyrion of his plans to restore the Targaryens as the rulers of Westeros. Loved it. You know, Varys is kind of a secretive character. So kind of to have him be this honest and open was pretty great to see and sort of a new thing. And Varys has determined that Tyrion is a worthy character. He knows that he's really flawed, but he's also, according to Varys, he's smart, he's a good strategist, and he's going to be needed in the coming days. So I think that I love that Varys is a good reader of his character, and it was great to see the two of them together.
Can we take Varys at face value here?
I feel like we can, but what do I know? I mean, I've been wrong.
I do
feel times.
Like he was showing his hand.
Yeah.
I kind of believed him, and okay. I think he was one of the few people that really appreciated what Tyrion did for his short stint when he was Hand of the King.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
he let him out.
You know, and even though for his own safety, he had to, you know, lie and things when mm-hmm. Tyrion was on trial.
Right.
But I really think he was showing his hand and being truthful, you know. Who knows?
There's only one thing I don't get about Varys. So this is a big deal that Varys just tells Tyrion, okay, my plan with Illyrio, Maupatis, it was to work together in secret to, quote, support a Targaryen restoration to the throne.
Yep.
So that's what he's been doing this whole time. Like, I didn't know that. But when you look at it, is that how you say it, Maupatis?
I have no idea.
He's the one who was hosting Daenerys and Viserys when we first met them in season one.
At that place.
At that place where Tyrion is right now.
And he's also the one who, remember when Arya was in the dungeons and she saw Varys talking to somebody down in the dungeons when she was chasing that cat?
Yep. Yeah.
That was Illyrio when Varys was...
They've been working
way back then
together.
In season one.
And he gave Dany the dragon eggs, too.
Yes.
So now it just becomes clear, okay, so Varys has been working with this guy to help Dany the whole time. Or at first, probably to help Viserys. And then they've been wanting to have a Targaryen restoration. And then, what I wonder is, okay, so Varys, Jorah Mormont was Varys' spy. And so that makes me think, okay, well, Jorah sort of was on Danny's side the whole time, whether he knew it or not. It didn't seem like he really totally realized it to me. But the thing that I don't quite get is in season one, when they got word that Danny was pregnant with Khal Drogo's child, that was because of Jorah reporting that back to Varys. Then why did Varys tell anybody that? And that's when King Robert decided to have Danny killed.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, you're right. But, you know, he does share some information. I guess he can't, I don't know. I guess for his own safety, he has to.
Yeah, maybe. I guess the king was aware that Jorah was out there spying for them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Jorah prevented Dany's death. I mean, he remember when she was about to be poisoned and mm-hmm. Jorah was there to protect her?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I really think that Varys and Jorah and Maupatis, or however you say it, are all on Dany's...
Just say Illyrio.
The Illyrio are all on the Targaryen side. So that's why it didn't make sense to me that he would share the news that she was pregnant, knowing that that might make her an even bigger target. Maybe he didn't realize that would make her a target. I don't know. Anyways.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think what was happening at that exact time, too, because, I mean, really, Varys, his overall goal is peace, I think, and he's just trying to figure out what is best for the kingdom.
Right.
You know, kind of while working the Targaryen thing on the side.
Yeah, yeah,
so,
exactly.
You know, maybe at that point, you know, Ned was there, and so maybe at that point he felt that... There could be some stability in King's Landing.
Right.
You know, then it kind of went to hell.
Thanks to Ned.
Well, thanks to
Littlefinger.
Robert dying.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
Littlefinger, yeah. Again, thanks to Ned, though.
Yeah, I mean, playing Ned, stupid and honest.
Well, yeah. And he told Cersei the plans stupidly. And then Cersei, we find out, put all of these wheels in motion. We just found that out when she was talking to Lancel. And Lancel says, basically admits to poisoning King Robert. That's because Cersei was there with him plotting to...
No, she doesn't know what he's talking about. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know what you're talking about,
dude. I don't know that he poisoned him, did he?
I think that's
what
he was
super
suggesting.
Drunk.
Yeah, or maybe he put some, like, sleep agent in there. something to
milk
make
of the
it,
poppy.
Well, no, I don't think we really know. But yeah, he said in this episode, he said, you know, I'm basically confessing his sins.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, that thing with the wine. And so yeah. what I took that to suggest is he did something to the wine
right.
that made him made it so that the king kind of was sloppy and he did get bored by a gore, but maybe he put some like Ambien in there or something.
Some medieval Ambien.
Medieval Ambien.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know though. We don't really know. That wasn't totally clear because she really did play it straight. But
she
I thought,
well, no, I think it was clear that he had a hand in it, but I didn't. I don't know if it was clear that he actually spiked the wine or just made sure
gave him a lot of wine.
That Robert had right. plenty.
Oh
of
God,
wine.
How could you give him any more than he asks for?
Here, have some more. I
very true.
A little bit
keep
more.
Going. Drink.
Come on, plenty left. Okay, Grace, I think it's your turn.
Okay, my number five was the dragons and everything else still look amazing.
Yes.
And just oh from season one, I remember, you know, as a book reader, I used to go into this one bookstore and I would talk Game of Thrones to the guy behind the counter, this little cashier guy, and we would totally geek out. And because we were about the same point in the books and the show was going on at the same time, and I was terrified to get to the point in season one, the last bit where Danny's dragons hatch, because I was like, oh man, they're just going to look cheesy. It's mm-hmm. going to look so CGI. And they looked amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, 5 years later, they still look amazing.
Yeah.
And they're huge and they look great. And the
fire
the
is
sets,
awesome and the sounds.
The fire, everything.
And they're
I mean,
pissed
to me,
off.
It's they're so angry. But I just. And I think that was one of the things with, you know, watching this new season, I was just like amazed all over again. And I yeah. love that feeling.
That's awesome. This,
the statue of the harpy tumbling down the pyramid in Marine.
Mm.
Oh my God. It was so yeah. cool. I watched it three times.
I mean, with all that stuff, the statue and the dragons, you can, I guess, kind of tell that it's CG, but it looks, I agree. It looks awesome.
Yeah. yeah. It looks amazing. Mm.
Well, just while you brought up the dragons then, I think it's kind of sad that she can't control them anymore. But I feel like that's just a symptom of her sort of being just not in a good place mentally right now. And that if she was more confident and like if she was going to war, I still think, at least I hope that she could get the dragons back under her command and rally them to fight for her. But now she's... Just, well, she went in there and she was like if you were a lion tamer, you wouldn't go into the ring and say, hello, Mr. Lion, can you please?
Yeah, she's scared.
Yeah.
She's not acting like the mother of lions. Right. I mean, the mother of dragons.
Yeah.
She has to go in there with confidence and she's not. And I think, like you said, she's not all that confident in her role as a queen right now. And I think she's not all that confident in her role as a mother either. And, and I think the dragons can tell, just like horses. They can tell when you're scared.
Well, I have a question. Okay. So horses are one thing. Horses are a little smaller and don't breathe fire as far as I know. Can you, even if you were the most confident person in the whole realm, could you?
The Targaryens of old used their dragons to win over the kingdom. That's how they.
Yeah,
they
I believe they
dragons.
Rode them.
Yeah,
and they commanded them. They commanded the dragons. Okay, well, you know what? Maybe they had dragon tamers back then.
I mean, that was that was the idea, right? That's been her plan from the beginning to use those dragons to take over Westeros.
She's very busy running her little kingdom there.
I think that's the problem. She's sidetracked.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. She should be concentrating on being a queen, and then she should hire somebody to train the dragons who is fireproof.
Well, I think that she has a Tyrion-shaped hole in her life.
Don't we all?
And she's just not the best politician. And, you know, I really think it seemed like maybe it was a mistake not to open those fighting pits. And, you know, I was so happy to hear Varys and Tyrion talk about heading to Marine. I'm like, yes, this is what I've been hoping for, waiting for 5 years for her to finally have some interaction with the rest of the show. So I hope that happens. And, you know, another thing that Varys said was, you know, you have your father's instincts for politics and you have compassion. Mm-hmm. So yeah. It seems like they could be a great team if he was, you know, her right-hand man. Although it seems to me they would fit together so perfectly. And then I realized, well, that's what this show does. It sets up these perfect possibilities and gets you hoping for them with all your heart. And then it breaks your heart. Yes. So.
Yeah, exactly. Then George R. Martin
would make a perfect hand.
Or a king himself.
Yes. Yeah.
No, not so much.
Oh, they're both so great too. She needs Varys, and she needs Varys, and she needs Tyrion. Yeah. And then she needs to get Bronn back so that Bronn can also be Tyrion's sidekick.
Yeah, all the best guys.
Yeah, and then they need to get Pod because Pod makes me so happy.
So she can have a little recreation on the side.
Just because he's sweet and loyal. She already has something on the side. She's got,
but she doesn't have Pod, who apparently is so good with the ladies that they don't even accept payment.
And she needs Brienne to fight for her because she just wants a freaking good lord to fight for.
We totally just made like a baseball sort of like All-star. A dream team.
Well, yeah. You know what I just realized? They're gonna totally kill Dany at the end of the season.
Yeah, I know, because this is what we want. Because
we said it.
Don't say that, book reader.
Because we want it so bad.
We do need to do like fantasy league.
I know. Well, that also makes me realize how many great like positive characters there are. When you think of Game of Thrones, you think of nasty backstabbing people, but there are plenty of honorable people on the show.
Oh yeah, a lot.
Not all of them are perfect though.
As Varys said to Tyrion.
And if they're really good, they come to no good end.
Yeah. So far. Well, there's a few left. All right.
Arya.
My turn? Arya, I think she's turned into a little brute.
What?
Yeah, she left poor Hound there to suffer instead of giving him a merciful death.
Poor Hound.
I know. I guess you deserved it. Okay. Ugh. Okay. Well, let's move on to my number five. So mine is kind of the past and the future. As I said, this episode called Wars to Come felt kind of like a prologue for the season. It had a lot of setup for the future, but also it had reminders of the past. Another possibly good title for this episode, The Future is Shit, Just Like the Past. But it had, okay, so here's some things from the past. The Cersei flashback, which I think may be the first flashback in the series. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure.
Yep.
I would love to see more. I want to see Sean Bean again.
Aww.
Then we talked about Lancel visiting Cersei, which is a reminder of their past, some character from the past. And then we have Tyrion and Varys visiting this area of Pentos, which showed up in the first, I think, episode or season. Then even Jon Snow training guys at Castle Black, it reminded me of scenes in Castle Black in season one when he was training Sam and other guys. So it felt like a return. Then as far as future, there's just setup. So Tyrion and Varys onto the road to Meereen has me really excited. And I hope...
Road trip.
Yeah, can't wait to see Tyrion and Daenerys meet, and I hope that happens. I shouldn't get too attached to anything in the show.
I know.
Then do we have this whole development with Mance, which I'm sure we'll talk more about, but now that Mance is dead, I wonder, well, are the Wildlings still going to follow Stannis? And
no.
If so, will he pardon them and give them land like he said he would if Mance would have bended his knee? And that reminds me, a fight I'm bummed we'll never get to see is the Wildlings versus the Dothraki. I think that'd be awesome. So I don't know, just a lot of setup. I one thing I'm not sure is setup or it's just sort of shunting something aside, but I loved how Littlefinger just kind of dropped Robin off at military school.
Good luck.
See you later.
Bye.
Shape this kid up. All right.
did anyone else, when he was doing his little knight training, did anyone else get the theme from Monty Python, the Brave Sir Robin?
Oh,
do you remember
that? That would be awesome.
Yeah. David started singing that. And I was like, oh my God, that's it. That's hilarious. It.
Yeah. I don't think Lord Royce was too impressed there with Robin's skills.
No.
Yeah. So I wonder if like we'll get to see him again in a year or something and he'll be this little proper button-down kid or something.
Anyone who breastfeeds until he's 16 is probably not going to be all proper.
I almost felt sorry for him because it's his mom's fault for spoiling him that he is such a sucky person.
Yeah. And, you know, it was funny because my husband, we were watching it together and he was, you know, laughing at little Robin. I was like, give him a break. He just got off the breast last year.
Poor kid. Needs time to adjust. Yeah. Okay.
Exactly.
Karen.
All right. Yeah. Okay. So speaking of the past and the future, let's talk about the future. Winter is coming. Hello. Anybody? Okay, so Stannis kind of gets it. He sort of understands, and he went to the wall, and he knows that the north is where the big fight's going to be. So he has his first big victory there. But, you know, he even is still pretty much more concerned about...
Yeah, I'm not sure he gets it, because he's just gathering his army to go right back down south.
Yeah, now we're going to take Winterfell from Roose Bolton. Hooray, by the way. That would be very, very nice. Yeah, and he's doing that, and he's not really paying attention to what Mance Rayder is talking about the real threat to the North and what to do about it. At first, it sounded like, okay, he's going to listen to the Red Witch, and Melisandre kind of understands sort of maybe what's going on, but even she's kind of all about, you know, killing Mance and the one true god of light than about the zombies who are on their way, big dummies. And she's all, by the way, was that the creepiest elevator ride between Jon Snow and Melisandre? Well,
what I loved is she's like,
so uncomfortable.
I like how he takes his glove back from her.
Give me that. Disgusted. I liked how she's like, are you a virgin? And he's like, no. And she said, good. And I thought if he would have said yes, she would have still said good.
Right, exactly. Matter. The light of the one true God burns inside her. Right. Here, feel this. Ugh. Anyway, so it's sort of like, you know,
creepy cougar. Mm-hmm.
They still kind of don't get that there's a lot of crap happening north of the wall.
I don't think they get it.
No. No, how many times do you have to warn people? And I don't want to beat my environmental drum, but it almost feels like
global warming,
climate change. Mm-hmm. Climate change is the big zombies marching down from the north that nobody's paying attention to, and we're all really concerned about all of our little local skirmishes. But in fact, there's a big freaking zombie coming at us called climate change.
New slogan for global warming: summer is coming. It's gonna be
right.
Really
hot. Yeah, exactly. So anyway, that was me, Gracie.
Okay, my number four was, and you touched on it a bit, but the flashback with little Cersei. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Game of Thrones has been really spot on with her casting of the children on the show, and they just knocked it out of the park again. I thought this little Nell Williams, I think her name is.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I knew it was like Cersei as soon as she got that evil smile on her face. Oh, that's Cersei.
Yeah.
I know. It was great. And like you said, it was the first flashback they've used on the show. So I'm just glad they did it so well. And it fit into the story really well because, you know, here's Cersei, adult Cersei, and her life is just continuing to fall apart. She's, you know, lost her oldest son, and it seems like she's losing her power. And so, I think it would just be a natural time for her to look back and remember that prophecy from this witch. And it was just, it was great.
Do you feel more empathy towards her after seeing that?
Hell no. She was a little brat, but way back
even
then.
Even back then. I know, me too. I mean, I'm like, no,
I thought
she was bitch.
Maybe that, you know, I love this show. I love to sort of try and see things from the point of view of characters that we've come to think of as bad, like Jaime. You know, you hated him at first, but the more you get to know him, you kind of understand a lot of what he did. But with Cersei, you're right. I still was like, well, some witch just told you that your kids are going to die and somebody's going to overthrow you. So you still just went ahead and had three kids and tried to be the queen anyway. And followed this whole path of doom for yourself.
Yeah. Right. And, I mean, even that story that last season that Oberyn was telling about Cersei and how she was just so awful to like a little newborn Tyrion.
Yeah.
I just don't know if I can.
That part I can sort of understand, because if she loved her mother, and as a kid, her mother had this baby who she thought, well, and then died. And then the baby looks different. I mean, yeah. I'm not saying it's right, but
And even the father hates the baby too.
You think of him as, this is what killed my mother. Well, yeah. I thought that whole thing was great too, and that it was obviously a formative moment for her. And so I wanted to go through and just kind of catalog exactly what the witch predicted and what it meant. So she says, you'll never wed the prince, you'll wed the king. So I guess Cersei was betrothed to Rhaegar Targaryen, who was Aerys Targaryen's son. And then after the Lannisters helped the Baratheons take over, she got switched over to Robert, which tends to happen, those kind of things. And I thought that's really interesting because Rhaegar is blamed for starting the rebellion by abducting Ned's sister, Lyanna. And Robert loved Lyanna too, which is one thing that Cersei always held against him. So I guess Rhaegar maybe had, maybe Rhaegar and Robert were fighting over Lyanna. I don't know. Then the next line was, you'll be a queen for a time. Then comes another younger, more beautiful to cast you down and take all you hold dear. Well, I guess that's Margaery. We don't know for sure, but.
We don't know because there's some other young would-be queens. You know, we have Dany.
Oh, that's true.
Sansa, you know, we have a lot of young, beautiful women, but yeah, definitely Margaery too.
Well, it was interesting to me in this episode where somebody predicts that someone more beautiful will take everything from Cersei. Then later when Margaery's brother says, you know, oh, if I don't marry her, then you're going to be stuck with her here. And she's like, perhaps.
Yeah. What did she mean by that?
Yeah, I don't know. It seems like she has a plan, which I'm very curious to see.
It seems so.
Then she goes on, the king will have 20 children and you'll have 3. So I guess this suggests that Robert might have a bunch more bastard children we don't know about.
Look at him go, 20 children.
She could have been exaggerating. I don't know. Then gold will...
Just rounding.
Right, rounding down. Gold will be their crowns, gold their shrouds. So that means they will have crowns but then die. That could have been an exaggeration too, because we know Joffrey and Tommen have crowns. Marcella, the sister, I don't know if a princess wears a crown, but Joffrey's dead. Does that mean Tommen is doomed? I mean, I think he's doomed.
Maybe. He seems very nice.
Also, gold has to do with the Lannisters too, so that might have partly meant that, you know, they're Lannister children through and through. Okay. But, you know, of course, they do have the crown, too, so we'll see.
And that.
And what did the maniacal laugh mean?
Nah, I'm a witch.
Yeah, that means I'm a witch, yeah.
So that's all I had to say about that one.
You're cursed, and it's hilarious.
All right, so my number 4, I've already talked about a lot of it. It's just Varys's plan. But I liked when he said, the Seven Kingdoms need someone stronger than Tommen, but gentler than Stannis, a monarch who can intimidate the High Lords and inspire the people, a ruler loved by millions with a powerful army and the right family name. All of that sounds like Daenerys. I think another person who almost fits that description is Jon Snow.
Yeah.
There's a couple of reasons why I don't think he'll ever be king, because I think it's too obvious at this point. I mean, to me, it seems like where the series is leading is that it will be revealed that Jon Snow has some high-born parentage and he will be king. But that's too obvious, and he's also too good, and we see how Martin treats good, honorable leaders.
Has a bastard ever risen in this realm to become king?
Well, they would have to be... Well, maybe not king. You know, they'd have to be legitimized.
Right, and his dad is dead.
Well, yeah, but he doesn't know who his real parents are. I mean,
That's true.
He thinks
it's Ned Stark, but
he doesn't know his mother. And Ned told somebody else his mother was a prostitute. But you know, I just think that it's going to be revealed that he has highborn parentage somehow.
We have no reason to believe, though, at this point, we have no confirmation that Ned's not his dad.
No. We think he is.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But maybe Ned had sex with a Targaryen. I don't know. Anyways.
Maybe.
That's all I had to say. So it's your turn, Karen.
I like it. Okay, so my next one, speaking of Jon Snow, is Jon Snow and Mance Rayder. The two of them, their conversation between the two of them, where Jon's really trying to convince Mance to accept Stannis's deal. And he knows that's not ever going to happen, but he feels like he has to try. So he goes and he tries his best. But Mance is like, nope, I'm just not going to do it. I'm not going to send my people to fight somebody else's war. It's just, you know, and I love that Mance admits that he's scared. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, who wouldn't be, you know? And
I liked that when they told him he got hanged or, and he goes burned alive. And then he kind of sighed. Oh, that's a bad way to go.
That's a bad way to go. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
That look on his face mm-hmm. was priceless. Like one of his eyes kind of twitched a little bit. Like, oh. It was perfect. Not to make a joke out of it, but you know, it's hilarious.
Oh, God, I love that Kieran Hines, too. He's so good.
Yeah. He's like, oh, I was hoping not for that
right.
one.
And I love that at the end when Mance is being burned alive and he's trying really hard to not scream and to not, you know, and all his guys are looking at him. And John's like, this is BS, man, and shoots him. And
his guys were kind of staring, but they weren't going to stop it.
Like, they couldn't.
It just makes me think they'll just fall in right behind Stannis. I don't know.
Oh, we'll see.
We'll see.
That George R. R. Martin, though, man, I really liked Mance Rayder, and I was really rooting for him. So I was bummed to see mm-hmm. him go.
It wasn't quite as emotional, though, right, as some of the other deaths. We haven't gotten too attached.
Right. I didn't swear off the series like I had twice before.
The whole time I was kind of in shock because I was watching the audience, watching them. I was thinking, how can they not look away? How can they just stand there and watch that?
Right.
Especially his own men.
Yes.
Because they're
right.
wildlings.
Ah.
At first, I kind of thought Mance was dumb for refusing to kneel because, A, he wants to get all his people in the South. So what did he expect? That he could just come south of the wall and like be a second king of his people. Is that what he really thought was going to happen? But I think it's not only about not wanting to kneel, but like you said, Karen, about not wanting to enlist his people in a foreigner's war. That kind of makes yeah. sense, but it still might be a good compromise, especially if he thinks they'd be fighting on the winning side and that would get going to be their new homeland. So I don't know if they really didn't have a great plan for getting, you know, south of the wall and safe.
I have a little bit, I have an interview with that actor mm-hmm. and he'll shed a little bit of light on what he thought was the reason behind Mance's choice.
In the news section.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, and I did like his quote, you know, he said the freedom to make my own mistakes was all I ever wanted. And maybe he feels like the deal isn't off the table for his people to kneel. But that would be their choice and not him putting that on them, maybe.
Yeah.
And he was still free to, you know, stand by his own moral code
right.
at the same time.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think I would have the spine to make that choice, but I'm not that stubborn.
Nobody like, wants right. to be burned alive.
Or moral.
I mean, yeah, maybe he thought, well, if he did kneel, then his people would just disregard him anyway. And so it might actually mess things up.
He didn't have a winning card to play there.
Right. The guy who plays Mance, I love him as an actor and watching him, but he seems a little too proper to me. He almost seems like a butler or something to be playing this wildling
character.
Well,
but he used to be, if I'm not sure if you remember, but he used to be a member of the Night's Watch.
Right.
Oh.
And he defected to the wildlings.
Okay, so he has a more formal background.
Yeah.
Got it. That makes a lot more sense then. Do you think there's any significance to both Mance and Tywin being killed by arrows?
No, just they're handy.
Cool.
Well, so was Jon Snow's girlfriend. What's her name?
Ygritte?
Yeah, she was killed by an arrow.
Ygritte.
That's true. Yeah, I guess there's just a lot of arrows flying around there. Okay. Yeah.
There's a lot of arrows. Common.
Your turn, Grace.
Okay, my number three is Littlefinger and Sansa. Just because I'm beginning to love these two together, like a little team, like a new team. And Sansa has really turned into this great character for me. You know, I don't need all my characters to be strong ones, but I'm kind of enjoying Sansa, like watching her grow, like under Littlefinger's tutelage, maybe you could say. You know, because I think she's now becoming like more of a player and less of a pawn. Like she used to be a complete pawn. And now she just seems like so much stronger. I love her with her black hair. And I really think she's learning the game.
The only reason I can't totally get behind that is because, you know, Littlefinger basically killed her father. I mean, he betrayed her. He betrayed him. And I guess she doesn't know that.
Right? She doesn't know that.
Yeah. So yeah.
I would think not, but I can't.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, I can't get behind, that's a good team. I mean, it is fun watching them together, but really what I hope happens is she finds out what he did. And then I want to see what happens after that.
Oh, I would love to see her kill him in the end but I just, you know, I think being with him for the time being is good for her, you know, to
some
be
education,
a better player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Do you think they're boning?
No.
That's what you asked in the last podcast. You seem a little preoccupied.
What?
No, I'm just
kidding. She's fixated on that.
I didn't ask you that.
Yeah, I just listened to all of our other Game of Thrones content. Okay.
And you never listen, Karen, so.
It's true. But it's not because I don't want to hear you guys. It's just because I don't want to hear me.
Okay.
All right.
Ask those questions.
Many times. So my number three is Melisandre. Well, first about Stannis. Like early on when Stannis came on the scene, I didn't really care for him because he just seemed like a oily kind of skeezy guy or something. But then after seeing him in action at the end of the last season, I was like, dude, this guy is a force. He's effective. He's powerful. But even though my feelings about him have changed with Melisandre at his side, I can't see anything good coming of him being king because it still seems like she's in charge and she's super scary.
Yeah.
And she's...
Yeah, she is.
She's like...
She is, and she's has magic.
Yeah, she's connected to what seems like satanic forces to me. I don't know, but I have a feeling if Stannis became king, this dark pall would fall over the land.
Yeah, I agree with you. She's making a giant mistake by killing Vance, in my opinion.
Oh, what should she have done?
Well, start by not killing Mance and start asking Mance, okay, how, let's figure out how we can
work together.
Tell us what, yeah, work together, or at least, you know, tell us about what exactly is happening north of the wall.
Mm-hmm.
You know better than anybody else. Hello, that's the big problem out there. But
so do you blame her more for Mance's death than Stannis himself? Since she's
hell yeah.
At
this point, Stannis is just her puppet, in my opinion.
It seems so in a lot of ways.
I think he is in a lot of ways, but all these kings, they have to believe that they're the only king and they can't have anybody else challenging that. So I could see any of, like, Joffrey would have killed him. Even, I don't know if Rob would have, but... Anyway, when Melisandre said, we all must make choices, we choose good or we choose evil, I was waiting for her to say, and I am evil. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's my number three. Karen?
We basically hit my highlights already, but I'll tell you my big runner-up, which is I love that now that there's sort of a gap in power that Tywin has died, that all kinds of crazies now are flooding into King's Landing, including the Sparrows. I can't wait to find out more about them. The weird religious fanatics. Yes, yes. I love that. I love that, you know, all kinds of folks now are feeling like they can rear their ugly heads. So it'll be really interesting. I love that over in Meereen, this doesn't have anything to do with Tywin, but I love that the Sons of the Harpies, then they're weird gold masks. Mm-hmm. I think it's fun finding out about these fringe groups and more crazy parts of George R. R. Martin's world.
My favorites were those warlocks or whatever they were that Dany met early on. Remember the sorcerers, I guess, that all look the same?
Yeah, right.
Those guys were creepy as hell. The sparrows, yeah, they, I forget who it was, but somebody said, well, now that Tywin, or if Tywin was here, he never would have shown his face here. Meaning, I guess Tywin kept those religious fanatical elements out somehow. I thought that was interesting.
That was Tywin's brother.
Okay.
Kevin, yes. I think his name is.
Cersei's uncle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Cersei's uncle. But, you know, you said these religions are rearing their ugly head, but man, Lance will look way hotter than he used to. So I don't
know that. A beautiful head.
I agree with you. I'm like, who is that hot guy? And I even told David, I'm like, that can't be the same actor.
That's what
he's
I
like,
thought,
no,
too.
No.
Yeah.
It was totally, without that long wig, he looks much better.
And also, he's a couple years older.
Yeah.
It's maybe, been a while maybe. Since,
beefed up a little
since
bit.
They filmed that.
Okay. My number two, I titled Perhaps, and we already talked about this a bit, but just Marjorie Tyrell. Mm-hmm. And what is her plan? Because it's obvious that she has one. And, you know, I've liked Marjorie from the beginning in the TV show because she is more of a schemer than she was in the book. And that's the only thing I'm going to say about the book. But I want to know what her plan is. I'm kind of rooting for her, of course, because, you know, her opponent is Cersei. Mm-hmm. And Cersei yeah. is an awful, awful person. And I don't know if Marjorie's a wonderful person, but, you know, the people love her. And she has a bit of a heart, I think, even though she does play the game. And she's not perfect, but she's someone I can get behind. And so I just want to see what is up her sleeve because she seemed plenty confident.
Mm-hmm. About Marjorie, I thought, I agree with everything you said. I thought it was interesting that she seemed a little more impatient and petulant than I ever remember seeing her before. And this is when she's alone with her brother and doesn't maybe have to put on any pretenses. So maybe she's more yeah. like her real self there. But yeah, yeah. totally.
And I wonder what her grandmother is, if her grandmother is still orchestrating her moves too.
I think she left, right? I think she left King's Landing.
Yes.
Oh, did she?
But, you know, they have ravens, so
yeah.
go back and forth right. all over the place. So
it's like the email of Westeros.
Yes.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, my turn?
Yep.
Yes.
So I already pretty much totally covered my number two, which was Tyrion and Daenerys and all that. So, Karen?
I already covered mine, too.
Grace?
My number one, which I couldn't believe was Karen's number five, was Tyrion and Varys. Anytime, I mean, I love watching Peter Dinklage at work and just anytime he has this good monologue and then to have is great. And then to have this wonderful back and forth with Varys. And we haven't had that for a while. So it was great to see again.
Yeah.
And I hope we get more of it. I'm really excited that they are together and it seems like they're going to be traveling together. So we're going to get more of it, which is great.
Yep.
Yeah. High comedy. Yep. Okay. My number one was, I already talked all about the Cersei's encounter with the witch, but I have a bunch of notes. So okay. It's interesting now that Tywin is dead, Cersei and Jaime are in charge, and I think Jaime has the right idea to focus on shoring up their power and stabilizing thing, but Cersei's just really pissed at Tyrion and she's focused on him being dead. I love that Tommen barely gets seen and no dialogue. He's such a figurehead king and
But he, even though he didn't have any dialogue, he had an important kind of second or two where he looks longingly after Marjorie. He's into her. And I was thinking, oh, he's too young. He's not going to be into having Marjorie as his queen. But I'm wrong. The two of them.
Yeah. And that just shows that she's going to totally be in control, too.
Oh, yeah.
How old is he? Oh,
I'm not sure.
He looks like he's about 13 or something, 12.
Yeah.
When I was 12, I would have been in love with Marjorie.
Oh, yeah. She's awesome. And she loves Sir Pounce, so.
That's right.
Love me, love my cat.
You love Sir Pounce.
I do love Sir Pounce. Sometimes we call Posey, sometimes we call her Princess Pounce. Nice. Wow, I can't believe I just said that out loud.
That's awesome. Well, I hope that Tommen has a bigger part to play at some point, but I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't, but we'll see. I read that Oliver, the guy that Marjorie's brother was getting busy with, is running the brothel in Littlefinger's absence. So that was interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think he's like Littlefinger's protege.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What else? Oh, I thought it was interesting that right as, you know, poor Brienne, we didn't talk about her, but she's kind of given up. But she was talking with Pod about, Pod was like, you're supposed to find Sansa and Arya. And then Sansa's carriage passes right by her.
Right by her. It's right there.
Everyone's like, loser. No, I'm just kidding. Poor Brienne. She's so low.
I know. I'm pretty sure Emilia Clarke has said she won't do any more nude scenes. And so it was interesting that Dario is like flashing his ass at the camera. And here she is doing the whole sitcom wife thing of holding the covers up to her neck. I wonder how that feels on set. Yeah, we got
plenty of male booty in this one.
It's going the wrong direction, this show.
And anyway, you know, that horse has left the barn. She's been in her altogether pretty much. Yeah.
Well,
many times.
I'm pretty sure after seasons 1 of 2, where we saw plenty of her, and we can always go back and watch that again if we want to, that I think she said, you know, I'm not going to do any more of that, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the show is successful and they need her, obviously. So I think she can probably make that demand.
Oh, totally. And I don't want to come off like I think that was a bad thing. If she doesn't want to do that, then more power to her. That's totally fine. But I just thought it was interesting that scene. The despair, I don't know, how do you say it?
Dario.
The contrast, yeah.
Oh, yeah, the contrast.
And speaking of Dario, Dario's whore mother sold him to the slaver she fucked the night before, which is totally rough.
Yeah. And he didn't even seem to bear any ill will towards him. He's like, yeah, I was a bad kid.
Yeah, he's like, it's all right. I got to be a good fighter and came up in the system. It was great.
Yeah.
Tyrion's view from inside that box they showed for a minute, it reminded me of the Randall cam from Walking Dead.
Yes. Oh. Yeah. By the way, did you know inside that the director was one of the directors of Breaking Bad?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Good job.
I didn't know that either.
Michael Slovis.
Cool.
Yeah. Because it felt like a little Breaking Bad-ish.
Finally, here's my favorite line, or one of my favorite lines from the show. Here he goes.
I cannot say I feel overly guilty about leaving you in that fucking crate.
Do you know what it's like to stuff your shit through one of those air holes?
No. I only know what it's like to pick up your shit and throw it overboard.
Touché.
That was a great one.
Touché.
Touché. So that's all my notes. Anybody else?
Nope. I think we covered mine.
Okay, good. Let's do listener responses.
Okay, so the first one comes from Joanna Philomena, who said, I noticed right off in the opening credits, Winterfell is no longer burning. I noticed that too.
They showed that in the credits before?
Yeah.
I'm so clueless.
Yeah, it used to burn. Yeah, it used to have some smoke.
Interesting.
Yeah, smoking. But now...
Roose put out the fire.
Olivia Deck said, definitely hurt to see the Bolton sigil on the Winterfell during the opening sequence. Hashtag the North remembers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It's harsh.
Jamie Dimmick says the little girl who played Cersei was perfect. I knew who she was supposed to be right away. Yeah, totally.
A lot of people said that. It's pretty cool. Laura Will Swink says, a bit slow, but I appreciated all the setup for season 5. Good for Jon Snow's mercy kill. And I can't wait for the meeting between Tyrion and Daenerys. And I'm really glad that Cersei and Jaime didn't shag at their father's graveside. Exactly.
Drea Age, haiku review for you. Cersei sees future. Teenage dragons caged and pissed. Eunuch saves the imp.
That's one of your best ones, great one, man. And Evan Brookman, hey Evan, says, I want someone to get Daenerys a copy of How to Train Your Dragon sooner than later would be nice. I like it.
Right?
Absolutely.
Bravely bold Sir Robin rode forth from Camelot. He was not afraid to die. Oh, brave Sir Robin. He was not at all afraid to be killed in nasty ways. Brave, 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 brave Sir Robin. He was not in the least bit scared to be mashed into a pulp, or to have his eyes gouged out and his elbows broken, to have his kneecaps split and his body burned away, and his limbs all hacked and mangled. Brave Sir Robin. His head smashed in and his heart cut out and his liver removed and his bowels unplugged and his nostrils raped.
Let's move on to news about the Game of Thrones.
The first 4 episodes of Game of Thrones season 5 leaked. So, yep, that was a big deal. And I wonder what the ramifications of this are going to be. So, according to my source at TechCrunch, the very night before Game of Thrones season 5 was set to premiere, the first 4 episodes of the season have been leaked simultaneously. Rumors of this leak started circulating on the afternoon of the 11th. By 6 p.m., the files started appearing across myriad torrent trackers. In just a few hours since, over 50,000 people have grabbed the first episode. Game of Thrones is all... Yeah, I know, it's a lot. Game of Thrones is already the world's most pirated show. This probably won't help it lose that title.
Wow.
Yeah.
It might hurt things. Like, get more people used to pirating.
Right.
Possibly.
Yeah, and I also heard, and I hope this is not right, and maybe somebody can tell me if this is wrong, but I had heard sort of early on that it was possibly screener copies.
Yeah.
Which that's what's my guess.
I think someone might be getting sued, too, yeah.
Oh, you think someone was caught already?
Well, I think it had a watermark. That's what I heard. I don't know.
Ooh.
It said, Karen!
You know what? It would be really, really nice to get screener copies, but yeah. We have no such luck. Like the season before it, season 5 of Thrones will consist of just 10 episodes. With this, nearly half of the season has leaked before the first episode even got a chance to officially premiere. So I'm sure that's going to affect some of the official numbers that we're going to see for how many people watched on Sunday night.
So I am paying for HBO now, but I considered watching these and I decided not to, mostly because I don't want to forget which episode which thing happens in and then start podcasting about a later episode, you know, before it's time. But
I'm not sure if that's the noblest of
it's
reasons.
It's not. But I did pay for it. I did pay for it. But if you have seen these, listeners, and you write or call in, please don't spoil it for us.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That would be awful.
Yeah. Actually, you're absolutely right. Or write about it on the forums or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let us be surprised. We'd like to be surprised.
Yeah.
So, and I wonder also, I feel kind of bad for the honest screeners out there. And maybe this has nothing to do with screeners, but I wonder if they're going to tighten down.
I bet you they will.
Screener copies. Yeah. Which is kind of, that's really sad because a lot of people who write about the show want to be able to, you know, put a lot of thought into it and then release it quickly. And so it's going to take a little time now for other people's thoughts to come out. So it's sort of a no win for anybody. Sad. Okay, but I'm going to cheer us up because the next 2 segments are interviews. The first one comes from Entertainment Weekly. It's Peter Dinklage teases season 5 and reveals his favorite scene. And apparently, it's not what you think. So they ask him, what's in store for Tyrion this season? And Peter Dinklage, and by the way, this isn't at all spoilery. So Don't worry too bad. Peter Dinklage says he's in a world of pain and shit when we find him, obviously for good reason, but he has some people around him who convince him to get back on his feet because he's sort of ready to end it, which is very un-Tyrion-like. He's ready to give up. And the interviewer says he has a beard this season. Before the series started, that was your rule to the producers. No beard. Now, 5 seasons later, he laughs and says, well, I was referring to a beard that reached down to my knees in a sort of dwarf in Lord of the Rings way. This is a beard that I've actually grown. So it's more Tyrion and not Gandalf. And the interviewer says, more like Jim Morrison Rockstar than Gimli. And he says, right on, man. Thank you. It's my crate beard.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's more like drunken, down and out beard. That's what I think.
Yeah.
You know what, though? I think it even makes him more handsome, though. I dig his long hair and his beard. I do think he's you know, rocking a Jim Morrison look more than anything else. It's pretty awesome.
You know, I doubt it will come to anything, but I'm going to totally start contacting their publicists and see if we can score interviews.
Just play that little clip. Play that little clip for him where Karen says he's more handsome, maybe a little.
Okay. Good
idea. kidding.
So he says, the interviewer says, the trailer shows Varys convincing him to seek out Daenerys. Why does he want to find her? And Peter Dinklage says he's curious. He's heard so many stories about this woman. He hears that she's a kindred spirit, someone who's an outsider, who's been pushed to the edges, but has an unfortunate, dirty last name. Everyone associates the Targaryens with the Mad King. He wants to know her in person and is tired of hearing the stories. Varys helps convince him of the reality of her, and I think dragons are a big part of it. Everyone is denying the reality of these creatures, and certainly Tyrion has as well. But just like Tyrion's going to the wall in season one, he likes to see things firsthand.
Awesome. Yeah, this reminded me of that. This trip is reminding me of him going to the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah. And peeing off the wall.
I didn't think about that, but it's nice.
The interviewer asked him, I'll just say one more thing. The interviewer asked him, do you have an all-time favorite scene? And surprisingly, he says, yeah, I love reading these scripts. I love the scene in season 4 when he's talking with Nikolai about our cousin. There's so much of the show that's necessary to push the story forward because everybody is just trying to stay alive. And so many of those scenes last year in the cell really defined all these different relationships in Tyrion's life. But I love the lines about their cousin, who's a bit thick and smashing the Beatles, because it was about something from their past. It's like Tyrion's in shock or something, and he doesn't know why he's telling that story, and he just wants to know what it was about and what life is about. And it had such an abstract, non-fucking King's Landing feel to it. It was such a fresh breath. I love that monologue. Whether I serviced it or not is a matter of opinion. Peter Dinklage, you did, baby. You serviced it.
Awesome.
Yeah, I know. Isn't it great? Oh, God, I love him so much. Okay, so this next one comes from also from Entertainment Weekly. It's the Kieran Hines interview. By the way, did you guys ever see him in Persuasion, that Jane Austen movie?
No.
It's great, and Kieran Hines is amazing in it, and he's the kind of the romantic lead, which is weird
Nance,
because
right?
You look... Yeah.
Yeah.
You look at him and you think, romantic lead? As Mance Rayder, you wouldn't think that, but he's something else. So Entertainment Weekly asked, how did you find out about Mance's fate? I was kind of wondering this too. Kieran Hines replies, I had an idea when Stannis and Davos turned up last season. That meant something serious for me and my future. I got a very lovely email from showrunner David Benioff and Dan Weiss. They said, basically, hi, you know about this show, you know, all men must die, and now you're going to be on your way. Not quite like that, but it was very lovely. They said, we'll see you in August for a good old barbecue, basically. It's very kind that they let you know rather than just send you the script. It can be so much harder than in many series because they feel such a genuine commitment to each loss. But they have to fulfill their commitment to the series. So, and then the very last question they asked him was, what's your best memory of working on the show? And he replies, it certainly wasn't freezing my nuts off in Iceland. Those were bitter days. The people I work with were so great. The technical people, the camera, the sound, the costume people. It was huge, actually, the work they did behind the scenes in Iceland to make it bearable for us to do our work. So apparently he did not like working and freezing his nuts off in Iceland.
I don't blame him.
And that's it for the news.
All right, now it's time for Raven's calls.
Okay, our first email is from Jill Goth. Hi, I just wanted to let you know that I'm so glad that you are covering Game of Thrones. I wanted to comment on something Jason said in the second Game of Thrones podcast. He made the observation that relationships on the TV show seem to be more loving and less cold than they might be portrayed in the books. I think it's important to remember that the books are written from the point of view of very specific characters. For example, any interaction between Rob and his wife would have been seen through the eyes of Catelyn only. So the TV show invented periods of time that Rob and Talissa would be together alone for the purposes of the omniscient viewer. Therefore, it would seem to be that the relationship would be more loving because we are able to see them alone together. Thanks, Jill.
I can see that, but I still think, like, with Danny's assistants and the Unsullied guy, I just think that on the show they want to have some romance and they added it in. I don't know.
I agree.
But I can see what you're saying, that because of the point of view stuff, we wouldn't have seen some of the stuff that we're seeing, especially with those two characters.
Yeah, and because Catelyn's certainly not going to put a romantic spin on her in her thoughts about him.
Spying on her kids, yeah.
Or, you know, I mean, just that he was going against, you know, the whole, he dismissed everything up by Rob did by That's marrying right. that
She was no friend girl, of so. Hers, yeah.
Yeah.
So, can I ask, I read the first book, and all of the first book is told in chapters from somebody's point of view, somebody different. So, is that how the entire series has gone so far, Gracie?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, okay. It's an interesting structure to give it, you know, to tell a whole story from different characters' points of view. It's pretty cool.
Right. Without having a overall, I don't even know what you call that. You're the literary
An
guy.
Omniscient.
Omniscient, yeah.
Yeah.
They yeah. never switched omniscient?
No, I don't think so.
All right.
This next one comes from James Guyunas, who writes, this episode was like Christmas after the long off season. Here are some of the gifts that were given to Mance Rayder: the mercy of an arrow, to Brienne of Tarth, ignorance of the fact that both Stark girls have slipped through her hands within a matter of days, to Daenerys, a reality check about dragons, to Karen, Dario's fine top booty. What?
That's jokes that we made in our last podcast about Dario's fine tot booty.
To everyone watching Rob and Aaron getting beat up, I give this episode 4.5 Stubborn Burning Kings. Looking forward to hearing what you guys and girls have to say about it. Sincerely, James from Portland. That's hilarious.
That was
Thanks,
awesome.
James.
Thanks, James. James is actually, he's written in a couple emails, and it's good to have you listening. Okay, this one from Jeffrey Bray. Hey, gang, a great season opener. So excited for the season and your new podcast. I enjoyed getting a taste of just about every storyline from last season, and I can't wait to see Arya's storyline pick back up. A little disappointed that we won't get to see her and the Hound together again. I think that was one of the best duos in the show. Perhaps Tyrion and Varys can fill the void with their journey to Meereen. After rewatching season 4 this weekend, I'm hoping that Daenerys gets a more exciting storyline. Yeah, totally. Last night, though, was a bit of the same. Really could do without Daenerys until Tyrion gets to her, if her storyline is anything like last season. I think I heard that we won't get much of anything with Bran this year. Right, Bran and Hodor are out for the whole year, right?
Oh, is that true?
Yeah, they're not going to be in this season. If so,
that's right.
If so, it doesn't make sense to me. Bran is far more fascinating a character right now than Daenerys. Is this perhaps a book thing? I've only read the first book and stopped when I was so blown away by season 1. I don't want the books to ruin the series, but now I figure it's safe to get back into the books. Can't wait to hear all the reactions. All the best, Jeffrey Bray. I'm totally down with being a throner. Okay.
That's awesome.
We dub you Throner.
Okay. The next one is from Michael Harding. Hey, gang. What a great start to a new season, and I can't wait to see how all these plot lines pan out. One of my favorite scenes was seeing Robin getting his butt kicked in training and his fighting style being described as a girl with palsy. I mean, yeah. That's awful. Littlefinger continues to be such a great character, and Sansa is truly growing into someone you can really enjoy seeing as a character. Poor Brienne, so close yet so far away to finding the other Stark girl. I give this episode 3.75 out of 5 drunken imps. Keep up the great work. Mike, Columbia, South Carolina. Awesome. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike. That's great. This next one comes from Drea H, who writes, hey, guys, the long-awaited season 5 has finally begun. What a great premiere that leaves us with the promise of a wonderful season to come. Highlights. Where is Littlefinger taking Sansa? This guy always has something up his sleeve, and I love watching it unfold. By the way, didn't Sansa say we're heading west?
Yeah, he said they're taking her. He's taking her somewhere far away from where Cersei can harm them, but didn't say where.
Yeah, where would west of the Eyrie be?
Casterly Rock.
Get out your map, Jason.
Casterly Rock, right? I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I'm not a map person. I'm navigationally challenged.
Hermosa Beach. I don't know.
Tyrion and Varys. What fun times between these two. Tyrion's binge drinking was also quite impressive. I don't believe I've ever had the strength to violently vomit and then pour my next drink. Not to mention this dynamic duo is headed to Daenerys, and that is surely good timing as she begins to unravel. Jon Snow, true and fair. Shooting the wildling with the arrow to show mercy was just grand. I had a deep feeling of regret seeing the sky burn. That dude almost broke the wall, but when you consider what they're running from, it just makes sense. Dario's fine tot booty. Enough said. Wow, Dario's fine tot booty really does make a couple of appearances. Well, I can't wait to hear you guys talk about the premiere. Glad you decided to do a legit podcast for this fucking amazing show. I'm super excited too for season 5, and it's sure to be fucking fantastic. Well, guys, go find shelter because winter is coming.
Woo! That it
Thanks,
is.
Drea.
Awesome. Okay, Jen Jacobs says, hi, Jen. Ladies and gents of Game of Microphones, as far as the Game of Thrones Season 5 premiere, my only thought is meh. Other than Jon Snow stepping on Stannis' toes and putting Mance Rayder out of his misery, the Unsullied getting his throat slashed, thus pissing off Daenerys, and then Daenerys' dragons nearly taking her out, I wasn't sure if this episode felt season premiere worthy. It felt more like a normal episode, though the trailer for episode 2 looks amazing. House of Black and White, Irma Gerd. Love you guys, Jen from San Diego. The trailer for next week, we won't say anything about it yet, but it does look awesome, I thought.
Oh, you know Jen, don't you? Because you said San Diego, and I was like, I totally, if I would read that, would have said South Dakota.
yeah. She's a friend of ours.
Okay. Our next one is from Katie S. Hey, guys. Well, once again, Game of Thrones kicked off in typical Game of Thrones fashion. Betrayal, sex, and dragons. Angry dragons. And let's not forget Dario's fine tot booty. I just want to say the part of the episode that interested me the most is Dany with her dragons. I can't see her coming back from this. She has lost control of her dragons, and I can't see her gaining that control back. I can't blame the dragons for being pissed off at Dany either. Viserion and Rhaegal were the good dragons, and in their eyes, they have been locked away for no reason. That's right. They're not the ones that burned that little girl. Next week's episode, I can't wait for because we finally get to see the full Martell family. Now that the Starks are mostly all gone, the Martells, I think, will slowly become my favorite house. Oberyn kickstarted this, and now I can't wait to see what the repercussions of Oberyn's death are. Great podcast, guys. Keep it up, and always remember to wear a helmet.
What? Why? What is that reference?
I don't know.
I don't either. It's good advice. I like the whole tot booty thing. It's even though Mr. Blog's not in this episode, his presence is felt. Thank you guys for writing in. We appreciate it. And that's it for Raven's Calls. Let's move on to Book Talk.
Hello. Welcome to Book Talk. I have Jason and Karen safely sequestered to the soundproof booth so we don't have to worry about spoiling them on the books. So one last reminder, if you are not caught up on the books and are spoiler wary, skip ahead to the next chapter. So seeing that I'm on my own tonight, I'm extra excited to see that there are a couple of emails for Book Talk. I think I'll just start out with those and then I'll add any of my thoughts along the way or at the end of the segment. So our first email is from Nick Quinto. Hey, I'm so freaking excited about this new podcast. Maybe you can go over this theory regarding Jon Snow and Daenerys Targaryen. First off, I never actually believed that Ned forgot his honor. But if he did, my first thought was, I bet it was with a Targaryen. That's why he's kept it low-key. Plus, if anyone knew, Jon's life would be at risk. Then I thought a little deeper, while discussing it with a buddy of mine. What if Jon was never Ned's kid? What if he was Lyanna's? What if Lyanna was actually in love with Rhaegar Targaryen, and because Robert was so in love with her, it led to war? They did say when Ned found her, she was covered in blood, maybe from the childbirth. Rhaegar might have locked Lyanna in the tower for protection because he knew if anyone had seen her pregnant, there would be a huge mass of trouble. So, to protect his sister's honor and the life of baby Jon, Ned took the baby and said it was his. Of course, the honorable Ned Stark would protect his sister's memory and the life of the baby and take the hit to his name. That's just the person he is. I'm pretty sure there are discussions about this online, and it might even be a popular theory, but can you imagine Jon Snow and Daenerys Targaryen getting together? They'd rule the freaking world. Thoughts? Nick. Thanks, Nick. Yeah, the theory about Jon Snow actually being Lyanna's and Rhaegar's child is definitely a popular theory, and it's one I'm totally on board with. From what I recall, I think the book mostly makes it seem like Rhaegar abducted Lyanna and held her against her will. I can't discount your theory that they may have fallen in love. We really don't have that much information. I know we know that after winning that final tilt at that great tourney at Harrenhal, I think the tradition was that the winner was supposed to crown the new queen of love and beauty, but that instead of crowning his own wife, Princess Aelia, I think her name was, Rhaegar rode past her and crowned Lyanna Stark instead. And I've just always assumed that Rhaegar became obsessed with Lyanna and then abducted her. But, I mean, really, he seemed like a nice enough guy from the point of view characters that we do get. Maybe there was more to the story like you've speculated. And yeah, I think Dany and Jon would be totally a force to be reckoned with. So I wouldn't mind seeing them rule together. That'd be awesome. So thanks. Our next letter is from Jacob Evans. Hey, Podcastica. I have a contribution for Book Talk this week. Isn't Davos supposed to be somewhere else by now? Near miss between Sansa and Brienne. Brienne, you couldn't do this in the book due to the point of view narrative. Neither person would ever know the other was there. Also, it's worth noting that the Sansa storyline is now slightly beyond the books. They killed Mance Rayder! In the books, wasn't it a stand-in? This definitely looked like the real guy, really dead. Varys followed Tyrion and exposed his agenda. This was odd, but set up Tyrion's next journey pretty well. In the books, we don't see Varys again until the epilogue of Book 5. I hope we get to see more of him in the show. Thanks, guys. Keep it coming. Davos Seaworth? Yeah, I think he was sent to White Harbor by Stannis on some errand, and it was, he was all wrapped up there in his own drama. He wasn't at the Wall, you're right. And yeah, it didn't even dawn on me that we are completely caught up with the Sansa story. Good catch. And let's see. Oh, yeah. It looks to me like Mance Rayder is really dead. And you're correct. In the book, Melisandre only made it appear that Mance had been killed by using magic to make another wildling, I think his name was Rattleshirt, appear to be Mance. So Rattleshirt died in Mance's place, and Mance was still alive, but appeared to everyone as Rattleshirt. I don't know. If Mance is really dead, this kind of has my wheel spinning, and I'm wondering if they're going to eliminate the entire storyline with Mance's and Gilly's babies being switched, you know, not with magic this time, but for real. You know, remember Mance's son was sent off with Gilly and Samwell on their trek south. You know, I guess this still could come to pass, but it seems like it would be an easy way to cut like this whole chunk of the book out without really affecting the outcome too much. You know, on the other hand, nobody realized, not even Jon Snow in the book, that Mance and Rattleshirt were switched. So, you know, I don't know. I guess they could be tricking the TV viewers as well. Let's see. As far as Varys accompanying Tyrion across the Narrow Sea, I'm all for it. You know, I really think most of the changes they've made for the TV show have really worked. And I love to watch the cunning Varys play the game. And any more Varys is a good thing in my book. And I don't know, it does seem like it would be cutting out a ton of Tyrion's book storylines, but, you know, I'm really okay with him getting to Meereen sooner rather than later. I don't think I would miss out on all that stuff with him on the boat and whatnot too much. So anyways, thanks for your letters, guys. That was awesome. Let's see. I wanted to touch up on a couple of other things from the book. I have to say I was quite excited to see that they included the witch Maggie the Frog and her prophecies in the TV series. You know, though I thought it was really interesting that they left out the part, that last part of her prophecy. In the books, after Maggie told Cersei, "Gold shall be their crowns and gold their shrouds," she had said that, "And when your tears have drowned you, the Vlankar shall wrap his hands about your pale white throat and choke the life from you." And Vlankar being High Valyrian for little brother. So that, you know, point some fingers right there at Tyrion. And, you know, I'm not sure if they left this out because it could possibly be too spoilery if that comes, you know, if they actually go in that direction. You know, especially seeing how we know that some of the prophecies have already come to pass. But, you know, I thought I should mention that one. And another thing I wanted to note was the growing hostility between Cersei and Marjorie Tyrell. Seeing that TV Marjorie is more of a schemer and a game player than her book counterpart, I'm really looking forward to their face-off. And it has me wondering if Marjorie is going to play more of a direct role in Cersei's arrest. You know, if you recall, Book Cersei plans this plot to frame Marjorie for adultery and treason, but it just backfires terribly on her. But I don't know. Regardless of how true to the book it goes down, you know, it should be just a joy to watch. And I, for one, can't wait to see Cersei's penance walk, which is sure to come. I don't think they would skip that. Okay, I think I've covered enough for one episode. If you would like to join in on Book Talk, we'd love for you to write in. Just if you would add Book Talk to the subject line so as not to spoil our non-Song of Ice and Fire hosts. Now I'll get Jason Karen back in here with me so we can talk about what's coming up next week on Game of Thrones.
Next week on Game of Thrones, it's Season 5, Episode 2, The House of Black and White. It's written by the showrunners, David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, and it's directed again by Michael Slovis, who's fabulous, and he was the one who directed this episode. And I saw a little preview, and I saw Arya walking up to the House of Black and White. There was a black door, white door, which looked great. So I guess she's made it to her destination. I'm really excited to see Arya again. And I saw a snake had been delivered to Cersei and she's freaking out saying, it's a warning. And I think I read a little bit about what the snakes mean. And so I'm kind of excited to see what the snakes lead to.
Ooh.
Sounds intriguing.
I know, right?
Can't wait.
I'm looking forward to it.
Mm. Okay, you guys ready to close it out?
Yep.
All right, that's our show, episode 5. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. I thought that was great. I loved it. It was a lot of fun.
Me too.
Me too.
Other shows I've been watching recently, just quickly, Mad Men came back on. I don't know if you guys are into that. The Final 7.
Yes.
It's been good. Love it. Yeah. And then I also watched like the first 5 or 6 episodes of Daredevil on Netflix.
I've heard such good things about that.
It's good. It's really gritty and I don't know. I mean, I'll be interested to hear what you think, Grace, in particular. But the fight scenes are amazing. I don't know if you'll care about that.
That's cool. I have to binge on Better Call Saul and catch up and go through that season, yeah. And then maybe I'll try Daredevil.
That was great too. I loved it. But Daredevil, yeah, I don't know. Anyways, okay, if you want to call us, you can reach us at 813-563-3739. That's 813-Joffrey.
Oh, that's great. I didn't realize you got Joffrey. That's excellent. If you'd like to write in, you can email us at game@podcastica.com.
You can check out our websites at gameofmicrophones.com and podcastica.com.
And when you go to Podcastica, by the way, check out, we have a couple other great shows on there in our new network, so check those out. We're also on Twitter at Podcastica and on Facebook at facebook.com/podcastica. Next episode, Game of Thrones Season 5, Episode 2, The House of Black and White, with host Karen, Grace, and Mr. Blog. All right, that's our show.
Thanks for listening.
If you ever need to make a long trip across the narrow sea in a tiny box, make sure to bring a chubby eunuch along to clean up your shit.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.